So here I am. Here I am again and again. Yes, these are our cultural values here at COC. We value God's truth. We do. We do. We know what the Word of God means for life today. Okay? And we believe in the truth of God's Word. We value family and this notion that it's not about me. Okay? It's about me helping you as I try to be the best me possible, okay? And so we spent a long time talking about truth. We spent a long time talking about family. And I feel we're just scratching the surface. Even though we're about 6 weeks in, I feel like we're just scratching the surface on this cultural value of God's presence. And again, it's the intangible X factor. You know it's there, though. You know it's there, and you know it when you sense it, and you know it when you don't sense it. And so that's what we're going to continue promoting here in COC, and that's what I'm going to continue promoting here through my message today. And so I've been on this series of Taste and See. Part one was all about cultivating an appetite for God's presence. Part two was allowing that appetite to lead to an experience. Well, part three now is allowing experience to lead to what I call a transformed life. And we're going to continue to promote God's presence in COC, and it's a high value. It's a high value in our body here to pursue God's presence. All right, so I'm just going to hit you with a quick review of what we've been talking about. So this is what I mentioned in Sermon 1. We have this opportunity to have a life-changing experience, a life-changing encounter with the presence of God. Unfortunately, a lot of times that's not our experience of church, okay? And I shared a little bit about my experience last week, and I'll touch just a little bit more on that, but we have that. We have the opportunity, but so often our experience of church is not that. It's not this life-changing encounter. It's just this, can we just endure this for 45 minutes? When is he going to be quiet so that we can smile and nod and walk out the door kind of thing, right? Like I'm just going to show up because I'm supposed to show up. I'm going to maybe give some money because I guess I'm supposed to give some money. I'm going to eat a donut because the donuts are delicious. I'm going to drink some coffee. I'm going to smile and shake hands. But then let's just move on, buddy, and let's get out the door so I can get on with the rest of my life, right? And that tends to be our experience with church, okay? But I'm here to tell you there's more, right? There's so much more. There is so much more than what you and I are presently experiencing. And the reason why there's more is because we bought into this lie sometimes that God's presence, it isn't for me. And I even showed you, or at least I tried to, even through Leviticus, that God's presence is very much for you. It is very much for you, okay? The book of Leviticus is all about God's hand extended to us and saying, here, here, I want you in my presence. So here, okay, here. Yes, there's safeguards that you got to abide by because I'm holy, but here, come on, come be with me kind of thing. But then it's this, right? It's Jesus' death on the cross that shows us just how far God was willing to go. Jesus' death on the cross shows us just how far God was willing to go for you and I to be in his presence. And what did Jesus do? Well, he died on the cross. And when he died on the cross, those safeguards and those limitations in Leviticus got wiped away. And now we have this kind of access, right? We have this. We have the anyone, anytime, anywhere kind of access to God. Okay? And I said it like this last week. We don't have a framework for that sometimes, that kind of access. Okay? And so we have it, though. We have it through Jesus' death on the cross. That's what we've been given. We've been granted access for anyone, anytime, anywhere. And it's along this line that access has been granted, right? Access has been granted, but unfortunately, we take it for granted. We do. We have access, and we take it for granted. And I know I asked, all right, I'm going to share this verse with you again because it goes along with this idea of access, but this is Ephesians 3:12, and it says, now in him, that's Jesus, and through faith in him, still Jesus, we may approach God with freedom and confidence. Remember what happened last week in my sermon about Nadab and Abihu? Remember what happened when they tried approaching God just when they wanted to? They got toasted. They didn't have the same kind of access that we have today. Why? Well, because God is holy. Well, does that mean that God's not holy anymore? No. It means that through Jesus' death and resurrection, we've now become robed in his righteousness. And so now we present ourselves as holy, even when we aren't holy. And so now we have this opportunity, have that access, but we take it for granted. And I asked you this question, right? If we have this unlimited access, then why does it seem, Stephen, why does it seem like we don't experience God's presence? You can tell me I have unlimited access, but I ain't feeling a thing. Right? That's an honest statement. Okay? And it's this. It's our experience of church is the byproduct of our own limited engagement. You ain't feeling a thing because of limited engagement. And that's why, you know, two people can go to the same concert and one can love the concert and the next person can hate it. Two people can go to the same restaurant and one person can love the restaurant and the next one can hate it. We have this limited engagement with something, this limited engagement, and a lot of times we process so much of our life and so much of our experience with God through our emotions. And I don't know the last time that you really felt like you could trust your emotions, but you can't. You really can't. And if you have been, you shouldn't. Okay? Your feelings are faulty. Sorry. Your feelings are faulty and fickle, and it's time to get rid of them. Okay? Not that you stop feeling. Not that you stop feeling, but that you stop letting the feeling dictate the course of your life. Because emotions, they're tricky business. They really are. They really, really are. And so our experience here at church is the byproduct of our own limited engagement. And so we have unlimited access, but we feel like we don't experience God's presence because of that. We are the byproduct of our own limited engagement. And so it's time to engage. It's time to engage, and it's time to engage. And I left off with these limiting factors. Now, let me clarify. These limiting factors that I'm going to list, these don't limit our access. How much access do we have to God? All. Total. All. All. So what are these limiting factors then, Stephen? Well, these limiting factors, they limit our engagement with the all of God. They do. They limit our engagement. They don't limit our access. They limit our engagement. And so what gets in the way? Again, our perception, our faulty view, our misconception about God. I'll talk more about that in a little bit. Our sin gets in the way. The things that we hold on to, we think are holding us, but we're just holding on to it just as tightly. Okay? It's time to let that go. Our lack of desire. Okay? I don't get it. I don't know how you can desire God. Well, what are you filling that you've been created with the desire for God? So what have you been filling it with then? Okay? Let's get that off of the table, right? And let's go for the real good thing, right? And actually we had this conversation in the prayer room this morning about how, you know, have you ever spoiled your dinner before? Ever spoiled your dinner before? We have little kids that tend to spoil their dinner sometimes, and it's so annoying. You work and you make this masterpiece of a meal, right? And they come to the table, I'm not hungry. Why? Because I ate a pack of Goldfish crackers 15 minutes ago. What? Goldfish crackers? We're serving steak and you ate Goldfish crackers 15 minutes ago, right? 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 We're serving way better than steak here, folks. We are, at COC, we are serving up the good stuff, okay? And if you come in here not craving the good stuff, chances are you just ruined it with a Snickers bar in the parking lot, okay? Or something else, right? Okay? You ruined your appetite on something else, and stop ruining your appetite on things that don't satisfy. They don't. They don't. They don't. They don't. So please stop ruining your appetite for God on things that don't satisfy. Can I say that again? Stop ruining your appetite for God on things that don't satisfy. Okay? Just throwing that out there. Okay? Just throwing that out there. All right? And last but not least, our lack of awareness. Just not paying attention. Oh my goodness. Not paying attention. Kirk, have you ever had that issue of not paying attention? Exactly. Exactly. Not paying attention. And we miss God all the time. We do. We do. And oftentimes, actually all the time, it's God's working in the subtleties of life. But we're looking for the big bang. But if God always had to operate on the big bang principle to get you to connect with him, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Okay? It's the subtleties that we got to be aware of. So Lord, increase my sensitivity, right? Increase our sensitivity here. Come on. Come on. Yes. And it's this idea, right? God did everything he could do on his end. The rest is on us. And so again, my experience of church for a long time, okay? Long time was waiting it out. Waiting it out. When's this service gonna get over? Right? What in the world? And do you remember how I waited it out? You remember my illustration last week? What was I making? Oh, you don't remember? Ninja stars! And so I felt like I better make a ninja star for you. So here's our church bulletin from last Sunday. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? You know, I crafted this skill, Marilyn, over many, many Sunday morning services. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Those extra bulletins, I was putting them to good use. Recycling. That's what I was for the environment. Right? Right? Exactly. But this is what I would do. This is what I would do Sunday morning after Sunday morning after Sunday morning. And actually it took me a little bit. I had to sit there for a moment on Thursday when I was going to make one of these. I'm like, oh yeah, how do I make this again? But I got it. I got it again. Right? And so. So anyway, that's what I would do. That was my experience. And again, I would just wait it out until that day, until that Sunday morning where I decided enough is enough. Pastor gave the altar call, and it wasn't a salvation altar call. It wasn't if you wanna ask Jesus into your heart so you can go to heaven kind of altar call. It was, no, if you realize in your life that there's more to experiencing God than what you presently are experiencing, then come on up. Then come on up. And I'm so glad that I didn't let 30 feet stand in the way of destiny. Okay? I didn't. I wasn't going to let 30 feet stand in the way of destiny. And so I came up here, pastor prayed a prayer, and things changed. Radically? No. Drastically? No. It was the start of something. It was the start of something. It wasn't this, oh, now I'm good. Now my life is full of Jesus. And so now I'm good for the next, you know, next millennia. No, no. It was, this is a starting point for you, Stephen. And we'll see where you finish. But this is the start. And so oftentimes in our walk with Christ, we keep looping back to that starting point instead of making an advancement. And that's no way to live in Christianity. And we remember the good old days when we used to do and we used to do and we used to do. No, no, no. Stop cycling back to your beginning and let's move forward today, okay? That's maybe just for me, but we've got to get out of that loop. And so it was a daily decision because I want to talk to you about this. I want to talk to you about the difference between a marking moment and a defining moment, okay? Because big, you know, Holy Spirit encounters, altar calls and stuff like that, those moments can mark you. They can mark you. Like I remember, oh my goodness, that time where God really spoke to me. But then we let it settle at that. And we let it just mark us, but we don't let it define us. And there is a big difference between a marking moment and a defining moment, because I could have walked away from that Sunday encounter here at the altar. I could have walked away and said, well, that was great. All right, back to Ninja Stars next Sunday. Do it again, right? Oh, and I remember that Sunday that I responded to the altar call, and I could live my life through the framework of a decision I made at the age of 15. Instead of the new commitments that I continue to make every day, the daily decisions that I make to walk this out, to walk this out, this walk of I want to be more like you, Jesus, every day. And so I'm going to walk it out. I'm going to walk it out. Or I could have just let that moment be the moment. It could have marked me and I could remember it, but then I could go back to life as usual. And marking moments, unfortunately, they wear off. They wear off in mundane, everyday life, which is why you need defining moments. You need to let that moment define you so that it isn't just that thing that happened once upon a time. It's that thing that happens every day where I make up my mind to walk this out for Jesus, okay? Because I remember telling you this, but it was my good friend that stood up first. In my experience, I was sitting there making Ninja Stars, pastors offering the altar call. Who's going to respond to that? And it was my good friend who I looked up to, and he wasn't a kid that would go forward in church, and he went forward in church, and that perked my attention up. And I decided, I'm going to come forward. What's sad and tragic is his moment only marked him. And unfortunately, he is not living a life for Jesus today. I wish that weren't true. His moment marked him, and that's nothing against him, okay? Okay? But I wanted my moment to define me. I really did. I wanted my moment to define me, because we have different paths. And again, I wasn't praying a prayer for salvation. I was deciding to live a life of sanctification that day. Like, I'm going to be set apart. I'm going to do things differently. And in order to do things differently, I don't know if you know this or not, to go against flow, you have to decide to. And you can't just decide once and call it done. It's a daily decision to go against the flow, right? It's daily, it's daily, it's daily, all right? And so anyway, I'm going to lay this spectrum up to you right here. We're going to talk a little bit about this towards the end. But anytime you are trying to create a habit to change your life, you go through this progression, okay? It starts first with desire. I want to change. I want to do things differently, okay? And then desire leads to an experience, right? I decided I want to ride roller coasters, so then I experienced riding roller coasters, okay? But then as you have more and more experiences, okay, letting moments define you and not just mark you, those experiences or repeated experiences lead to what's called habits, and eventually those repeated habits transform your lifestyle. Now, is that true of alcoholism? Is that true of drug abuse? Yes, yes. But is it also true of Christianity? Yes. Let's redeem that process. Let's redeem that process a little bit, okay? Because if it works for alcoholics, how much more so for the kingdom of God, right? Right? Because, so start with that desire. Start with that desire. And that's what I wanted to do in week one. I wanted to teach you about desire, increasing your appetite. Stop filling yourself up on garbage, but crave the real things of God, and then taste and see and experience his presence. And then don't let it just be one moment. Well, that was one Sunday. That was a good sermon. That was a good sermon, preacher. That was really good. Okay? But I forgot it already by the time I got to the parking lot. And what, by Monday, it's like, what were we talking about? By Tuesday, I'm just barely holding. By Wednesday, I'm back to where I began again, and I loop to my starting point. And we keep looping around the track. We keep looping around the track. instead of making progress. Making progress. Making progress. Okay? And so it's gotta be this process, though. You gotta let desire lead to experience. Gotta let experience lead to habit. And you gotta let habits transform your life. Okay? And let's pursue that today. Let's pursue that, all right? So I'm going to hit you with a key passage today. If you could, if you're willing to, I want you to open to 2 Chronicles for me. 2 Chronicles. I'm going to talk to you about an amazing passage. I almost said one of my favorite passages in the Bible. I stopped myself short, even though it is one of my favorite passages in the Bible. But I always say that. So anyway, sorry. All right, so let me hit you with a little bit of the background here. So this is 2 Chronicles chapter 5. What you need to know is this is about Solomon's reign, okay? Now, Solomon was David's son. Do you remember what David's dying wish was? Do you remember what David really wanted to do? He wanted to build a temple. He wanted to build a temple for God because up to this point, they've had still the tabernacle and the tent of meeting, which is crazy. I don't know how long you've had a tent last in your home, but tents don't seem to endure that long, okay? But this tent of meeting and this tabernacle have been around now close to 1,500 years at this point. Crazy, crazy. And so God, what David's heart desire was, is he wanted to build this magnificent temple, okay? And God, unfortunately, doesn't grant him that desire. That wasn't part of David's destiny, to build the tabernacle or to build the temple for God. But it was David's son's destiny. And so Solomon gathers all these resources, and it's a great read in 2 Chronicles about what it took to build this structure. I can't even imagine what it looked like, okay? But anyway, so he gathers all these resources to build this structure, and what's happening here in 2 Chronicles 5 is this thing called the Ark. The Ark is coming. Noah's Ark? No. Nope, not Noah's Ark, okay? The Ark of the Covenant, which was this big ornate box, which signified God's presence. That box signified God's presence, right? Okay? And so this passage right here is when the ark is coming into the tabernacle or into the temple here, okay? And so this is verses, or chapter 5, this is verses 13 through 14. I'm going to read to you, and it says this, right? It says, the trumpeters, musicians, they all joined in unison, okay? So they're all singing, raising up their voice. Look what they're singing, what they're saying. He is good, talking about God here. His love endures forever. And then there's this huge marking moment. This huge marking moment where when they do that, when they gather in unison and are praising and worshiping God and the ark comes in, the temple of the Lord gets filled with the presence of God. That's what that means there, filled with the cloud. The cloud was God's presence that was guiding them, right? So the temple is filled with this cloud, and it's so intense, God's presence, that the priests, they can't even perform their services, their functions, what they have to do as priests. They can't even do it because God's presence is just filling up the space. And I love reading this passage because they're like, yeah, Lord, do it. Do it. Do it in me. Do it in me, Lord. Fill me. Fill me. And so it fills this place, and the glory of the Lord fills that temple, and it's this beautiful, beautiful event. The problem is, those Israelites, those buggers, like you and like me, they didn't let that moment define them. They didn't. Because I'd love to say that they made God their God, and the rest is fairy tale history. But you and I both know that that's not true. And they merely let the moment mark them. They didn't allow it to define them. And I just think, Lord, help me. Help me to not just let these things mark me, but let them define me. Let them change something in me, right? And I thought about it like this. The honeymoon was over, unfortunately. The honeymoon wore off, okay? Those of you who have been married for a few years, you know what I'm meaning right now. But that honeymoon wore off, and suddenly, you know, bliss and love and joy and happiness turns to arguments over what kind of toothpaste we're going to buy. Right? 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 Because we let it mark us, but we don't let it define us. And this moment, which is so awesome and amazing, I would love to go back to that, but at the same time, I realize that I have the same opportunity today. I don't have to go back to Solomon's temple to experience this. Praise God. But in our brains, our goofy, goofy brains, we get to thinking, oh, I wish I could just go back. Just go back to the good old days. When were the good old days? Other than never. The good old days never existed. You're living in some romanticized view of the past. Drop it, move on, right? Right? And it's that idea that we let that moment just mark us, and we romanticize that moment, and we measure everything against that moment. And when we measure everything against that moment, then suddenly that moment becomes something that it never was in the first place. And all of our expectations are unmet, and eventually, it's like, wait Tuesday morning in your house, you who have been married more than 5 seconds, wait Tuesday morning in your house with your lovely, loving spouse. I'll just do both of them, right? Against your wedding day, right? Right? Is that fair? Is Tuesday morning a fair comparison to your wedding day? No, but that's what we do. We weigh our moments against that moment, and we let it just, our expectations don't get met, and then eventually it just erodes. It erodes our experience to the point where we just start looking for other things to satisfy us now, because we can't deal with the frustration of unmet expectations. Oofta, oofta. So they weigh that moment, and it just marks them. That's all it does, is it marks them. It does not define them, so that moment just became, well, some experience, you know, some people had, you know, some time ago. And that moment, it could have defined Israel. It could have defined them. And they could have decided God is going to be our God, and they could have let it become a habit which would have transformed their lives. But instead, they just let it be a mere moment. They only let it mark them. They didn't let it define them. And it becomes that. It gets reduced to just some experience I had once upon a time with God, once upon a place called church. And I don't know really where my faith is at today. That's a reality in culture today. That's a reality, and we got to get beyond that experience. We got to keep letting experiences transform us by letting those experiences create habits within us, which are going to lead to a changed life. All right. Key question. Where's God right now? Help me out. Where's God right now? Everywhere, Stephen. God is everywhere. Do you live like you believe that? Just asking. Is he in your living room? He is. Do the things in your living room always play out as though God's right there in the midst of you? Right? Right? Is he there as you're working on your computer? He is. Do we always live as though he's right there? And that's this idea. Where's God right now? We know the answer is everywhere. We don't live the answer, though. We know it's the answer. We don't live as though it's the answer, though. And one of the things that you need to know about God is he is omnipresent, right? He's omnipresent. Where do we get that idea about God? Well, it's from Psalm 139. David writes this, and he says this. He says, where can I go from your spirit, Lord? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you're there. If I go to the far side of the sea, if I ride on the wings of the dawn, okay? Even there, your hand will guide me. Now, is this kind of like the spooky kind of thing? You know, God's like, it sounds like that, right? Because David's saying, where can I go from your presence? Where can I flee from it? And the reality is no, but why would you want to flee from it? And why would you want to run away from it? Well, I think it's something called shame and guilt and sin, but that's the reality. God is omnipresent. He is there. It is an unchanging truth of him. He is there. He is here. He is in your heart. He is around you everywhere. The problem is we don't live our life with the awareness. We don't live our life with the awareness because I'll ask you this question, right? Because how can we be continually surrounded by God's presence and still carry on as though he isn't there? How can we be surrounded and still carry on as though he's not there? You know, and I could ask Brian to stand up and walk over and flip off those lights, right? How hard would that task be for you, Brian? Pretty easy, right? Pretty easy, okay? But what if, Brian, I tell you to stand up, go turn off those lights, but the whole time you're doing it, you have to balance my Bible on your head. Now, how easy would it be? A little harder, right? A little harder. A little harder. Sorry, I didn't mean to ruin your part there, buddy. Okay? Oh, it's picture day today, too. Don't worry, there's next week, right? Okay? Okay? Right? Right? It would be so much harder, and every step I take would have to be with the awareness that my Bible is there. And I'm not going to move fast paced. I'm going to be slow. But each time I move, I'm in constant awareness to this thing on my head. May my life be lived with a constant awareness of the presence of God around me. Like, why do we go through life in the atmosphere of God's presence, which is a promise? It's been given to us. Jesus died on the cross so we could have it, but yet we carry on as though that's not this thing. And a lot of it's our lack of awareness. We just don't live life in the awareness of God's presence. And so God, let me live life with an awareness of you and realize that every step, Lord, every step, keeping in constant communion with him, okay? Constant connection with him. Every thought lived with the awareness of God's presence. Every phone call lived with the awareness of God's presence. Let me live life in the awareness of God's presence. And it boils down to, I could label it as sin, but you know what it is. Yes, it's a lack of awareness. Yeah, it's our own self-centeredness, okay? Our pace gets in the way of life. If I put that Bible on my head, I could run over, I could sprint over there and flip those lights off without it on my head. But now with it on my head, I ain't sprinting over there. I'm moving slow and steady. And sometimes in our life, all we got to do to get in an awareness for the presence of God is just slow down a little bit and take a breath and stop running laps, only to wind up back where we started again, because that's no fun. I ran track in high school. It's no fun, okay? I ran the 2 mile in track because I was a weirdo. That's definitely no fun, okay? And we just keep running and running and lapping and lapping and lapping and lapping and lapping and, oh, there's the starting line again. There's the starting line. And then eventually the starting line becomes our finish line. Oof-da. Oof-da. I don't want my starting line to be my finish line. I really don't. That works for the 2 mile race and track. Don't let it work for my life, okay? Don't let it work for your life either, okay? So our pace. And then I'll talk about this. It's the misconception that we have regarding God's role, right? Because some of you might look at that as, oh yeah, Stephen's balance. Oh, so the awareness of God's presence. So as soon as he makes a faulty step, right? That's what God's going to do, right? We have this view of God, the zapper, right? The zapper, one of those electronic fly swatter things. I've got one of those things, okay? I thought about bringing it in, but then I decided I would probably get out of hand and shock Stan or something like that, so I'm not going to bring it in, right? But yeah, we have this view of God like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to live my life in awareness of God because one false move and he's there. He's just waiting. He's just waiting for me. He's just waiting for me to make a mistake so he can fry me on the spot. That's not this God. That is not this God. That is not this God. Oh my goodness. And who would want that kind of guy around? I wouldn't. I wouldn't. And so that's how we approach God's presence. We see it as this intimidating thing that's just waiting, hovering around us as soon as we step out of line. So then what do we try to do? We try to flee. We try to hide. We try to bury ourselves beneath emotional baggage, addictions, whatever, because we think that that's the solution. And we just plunge deeper and deeper and deeper into our own self-centeredness. And I agree, who would want that guy around? But that is not this God. That is not this God. And if that's the view that you have of God, let's correct that today. And let's ask for God to give you a new view of him and realize that he is for you. He is for you, and the cross is enough proof for you, okay? The cross is enough proof, right? Okay, so ask me this question then. Why do I need Stephen? Okay. So why do I need God's presence in my life, right? Oh yeah, right? It's for the power, right? The power, the miracles, right? The power. We want to have the power. And unfortunately, in charismatic churches like ours, we're a charismatic church here, sometimes we can exploit God's power, okay? We exploit God's power. We have this tendency to try to exploit God's presence for the power that it contains. Meaning what? Well, we're going to engage his presence. Okay, I get what you're saying, Stephen, about limited engagement. But, okay, so I'm going to engage God's presence, but only for what? Only when we feel the need for his power. But again, I'm called to live a life of awareness. Okay? I'm called to live a life of awareness. Okay? A life of awareness. It's not this need for these big explosive outbursts of God's power. Okay? It's not for that. God's presence isn't for that. God's presence is for the meeting with the coworker that you've been dreading. God's presence is for your attitude when you step out of bed. God's presence is for the way you respond to your kiddos when they make a mistake. God's presence is for the way you treat your spouse when you don't feel like they should be treated a certain way, right? That's what we need God's presence for. It's the day-to-day. It's the subtleties of life, and we have this tendency to exploit God's presence for the power, God, the power, right? Well, let's just see what that looks like, right? So this is 1 Samuel 4:3, and this is a good read, okay? If you get a chance, read 1 Samuel chapter 4. But what's happening is the Israelites are battling their old arch enemies, the Philistines, right? And so they're in this battle with the Philistines, and they go out and they fight the Philistines. And unfortunately, the Philistines deal them a pretty big blow in chapter 4 of 1 Samuel. And so they get in their head, oh, that's right, that's right. Remember that thing, that God, remember that moment? Remember, wasn't there something about stones and a god? And wasn't there like a guy named Moses? And like, didn't they beat like the Egyptians or something like that? And oh, I know, we're going to leverage God's presence. And he's going to do what we want him to do then. We're going to engage his presence so that we can experience his power. And so look at verse 3 of 1 Samuel chapter 4. It says, when the soldiers returned to the camp, the elders of Israel asked, why did the Lord bring such a defeat on us? Who are they blaming right off the bat? God! What in the world? The Lord brought defeat on you? Probably had something to do with your ill preparation. Okay? Just saying. But we'd love to blame God for any little thing that pops up in life. Okay? And so right away you can see they have this misconception about God and who he is. Right away, they got this skewed perception. Right? And so they, oh yeah, let's bring the ark. Right, that big box, that it's kind of like the thing that's got God's presence in. And they say the name of, the full name of it, it's called the Ark of the, keyword, covenant. Well, I don't know about you, but a covenant is a pretty big deal. I entered into a covenant relationship with my wife. And let me never forget the terms of that covenant. But unfortunately, guess what the Israelites have done over the years? Because they didn't let their experience mark them, or they let their experience only mark them, I mean. They didn't let it define them. And so now they're trying to engage this covenant, this ark of the covenant. And then, yeah, we'll do that. And then God, he'll do what we need him to do, right? We'll engage his presence for the power. And yeah, he'll go and he'll save us, right? Well, guess what happens? It's a beautiful story. Oh, my goodness. Well, they bring the ark out into the battlefield. The Philistines kick their butt again, kill Eli, who's the priest at the time. They kill Eli's two sons, Phinehas and Hophni is his other son, and steal the ark. And it's crazy because it sets off this whole turn of events where Eli, he's this old guy, and he's sitting at the gate of the city of Shiloh where the ark used to be. And this guy comes running up and he says, "The Ark of the Covenant's been stolen by the Philistines." And Eli, in his anxiety, falls backwards off of his chair. And he's a pretty heavy dude at this point in his life. And snaps his neck. And he dies that day. Both of his sons die. One of his sons, I think it's Phinehas, his wife is pregnant. She hears it, that Eli's died, that the Ark's been stolen, that her husband and her brother-in-law have been killed, and she goes into preterm labor and has a baby, and as she's having the baby, she's dying also, and she tells the people, because we love to transact our problems onto people, unfortunately, she tells the people, "Name the son Ichabod, for the glory has departed." Like, that's going to be our legacy today. Like, oh my goodness. They exploited God's presence for the power that it contained, right? And we can't, don't let us ever do that here. Don't let us ever exploit God's presence for the power that it contains, right? And they're only reaching out right in their defeat. They're only reaching out in their defeat because they want God to fix it for them, right? And unfortunately, that's our habit sometimes. We reach out only after we've been reaching in, right? Pulling everything out of me that I can try to do to fix the situation, and then not realizing there's an awareness issue. And, oh, God is supposed to be with me every step of the way, and do my steps that I'm taking align with him, okay? In that presence, okay? And so then ask it like this then. So what is the purpose then for the power of God's presence then? If we're not supposed to exploit it, Stephen, well then what's the purpose for the power of God's presence? It's this. It's Ephesians 3, 16 through 17. And this is Paul, and he's writing this. He says, "I pray for you, for me, that out of his, God's glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power." For what though? Through his Spirit, so that what? Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. That is the purpose of the power of God's presence. That is the purpose of the power. It's so that Christ, it's not about the miracles then, and miracles are a good thing, okay? Careful what you're hearing from me. Miracles are a good thing, okay? We heard Mary's miracle, right? That is a good thing, okay? But imagine if they were only reaching out to God in that moment in their life, right? And God's gracious enough, isn't he? He's still gracious enough in those moments at times to still intervene. But we let those moments mark us and not define us. And we got to let them define us. It's not about the miracles then. It's about Christ living in me. That is the awareness. It is Christ living in me. It is Christ when I'm watching TV in me. It is Christ when I'm engaging my kids. It's Christ when I'm engaging my wife. It's Christ in me. It is Christ in me. And it's that power that we need in our life. All right. So if I'm going to break the role of God's presence down into three things for you this morning. Okay. Three things. Whew. Getting myself a little worked up here. Sorry. Okay. God's presence is there for these three aspects, okay? Sanctification, purification, unification. Sanctification, purification, unification. And let me unpack these a little bit for you, right? So yeah, it's Christ in me. It is Christ in me. That is the purpose of the power of the presence of God. It is Christ in me, the hope of glory, to transform my life. Come on. Come on. So what is sanctification then, right? Sanctification is this process. It's kind of like consecration. It's this process of being set apart for sacred purposes, okay? Set apart for sacred purposes, okay? Being set apart. And so when I was making that decision at the age of 15 and a half, actually, walking down this aisle 30 feet, when I made that walk, I wasn't a prayer of salvation. It wasn't, this is going to punch my card into heaven. It was, this is going to be the starting point for a life lived devoted. And this is going to be the moment that defines me, because it's going to be followed by many, many, many more moments. And so sanctification, it's this being set apart. It's all about surrender with sanctification. And it's surrendering our free will and uniting with God's will for our lives. Do we have free will? Yes. Is God sovereign? Yes. Both are true. Both are true. But the real power happens, because God's sovereignty is pretty powerful, agreed? Yeah, okay. But free will is also pretty powerful, agreed? Because I could kick this chair if I wanted to, right? Okay, I could. Free will is powerful. God's sovereignty is powerful, right? Okay? But real power and real beauty happens when those two things overlay each other. And I tried explaining it on a Wednesday night once upon a time like this. You know, think of a train, right? Trains are pretty powerful. Like, very, very powerful. But take a train off of its tracks. It's still powerful, but it's not working at its potential. It could probably still move, although it'd be pretty clunky. And that's us apart from God's will. That is. And so real power comes when we take our free will, which is really powerful, and we submit it to God's sovereignty, which is really powerful. And those two things move along seamlessly. And that is real power. That is real power. And so sanctification is surrender. I'm surrendering my will, Lord, to your will. And I'm going to unite with your will for my life. And I'm going to see the power. What kind of power? The Christ in me kind of power. That's what I'm going to see when I sanctify myself. Purification, then, is the next part of the process. And so you start with sanctification, where you submit your free will to God's will. And then that leads to purification. And purification is this process of becoming holy. Okay? Holy. Okay? And remember, holiness was a prerequisite for God's presence. That's why Nadab and Abihu in Leviticus 10 get torched when they sneak into the tabernacle. Okay? Because they were covered in their sin. And sin can't exist in holiness. Is that an issue with God? No, it's an issue with me. Right? He's holy. He's told me he's holy. And so there, I can't blame him for being holy any more than I can blame him for being omnipresent. It's just a fact. It's a reality. It's him. It's who he is, right? And so it's purification. So sanctification, I submit my free will, and that kicks off this process of purification where I work on becoming holy. And it's a process. And it's a daily process, and it's a daily decision to walk this out in an awareness of God's presence around me. And once we've surrendered our life to God, He begins to clean out those things. I prayed this morning for a new wave of repentance, and that we would live repentant lives. And I can't get that prayer out of my head. I can't. I really can't. I've been thinking about it all morning, that I would live a repentant life of where I, like, in a repentant life, everything's on the table for you, God. It is. You want it, you got it. And that's what I'm praying. And so, Lord, I surrender my life to you. Now he begins to clean out anything in our lives that's going to try to hinder us or distract us or ensnare us. Why? Because he doesn't want us to loop around to the starting line again. Like, get out of the cycle. Get out of the cycle. Don't let your starting line be your finishing line. Okay? Let's get out of this cycle. Oh, we can go straight. Oh, what a novel concept. Right? Oh, I don't have to loop around. I don't have to fall into the same trap. I don't have to fall into the same thought pattern. I don't have to repeat the same cycle of emotion. What? I can go straight? Like, how novel of an idea that I can go. I can be this train on this track of God's will. All right, where are we going? Right? Right? We're going. We're going, Lord. Right? And we surrender our lives and we get out of that loop. And thanks to Jesus, my goodness, thanks to Jesus, that holiness isn't that, it's not a prerequisite anymore for accessing God's presence. But, let me say this to you, but purification and holiness should, keyword should, be the result of engaging in his presence. Okay? Just saying. Holiness isn't a prerequisite. Okay? And a lot of people could stop listening right there and go, oh yeah, holiness isn't a prerequisite, so I can just keep on being who I want to be. I can keep doing what I'm already doing. You sure can. You sure can. Okay? But as Stan would say, those kind of decisions don't lead to an abundant life. Okay? They don't. They don't. They don't. They aren't going to lead you to an abundant life. They're going to lead to you to life as you know it. And you're just going to keep looping around the track. Looping around the track. Oh, this again? Here we go again. Oh, I know this. All right. Yep. Yep. Here we go. Oh, yeah. I know how this is going to play out. Yep. 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 Okay. Oh, I've experienced this emotion before. Yep. I'm just going to follow it. Follow it. Follow it. Follow it. Oh, yeah. We're back to the starting point again. Okay. All right. All right. Here we go again. Right? Right? Holiness isn't a prerequisite, but don't stop there, because purification and holiness should be the result of us engaging his presence. Okay? It's not a prerequisite, and so you can be you. Okay, you really can, but maybe being you isn't that great anymore. Maybe be the new you. Maybe be the empowered you. Maybe be the sanctified, purified version of you, right? So let's keep following him. Keep following him. Let him put his finger on those things. My life is open to you, Lord. Put your finger on those things that need to get out of the way, because I'm tired of looping. I want to move forward, right? Because then ultimately it plays into this. Boom. Unification, right? Unification, and unification is the process of becoming one. One with the Father, one with the Son, one with the Spirit. Jesus' prayer in John 17, 22, verses 23, let them be one, Lord. Let us be one. Let me be one with you. It leads to this process of becoming one while becoming one with him, right? While becoming one with him, it also allows for unification here at this level. Between us, right? And that is, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. It's that process that we're leading towards. We're leading towards, why is God's presence so important in my life? So we can get to this. Ooh, Lord. Yes, so we can get to this, where it's this seamless connection between me and the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and you and me and the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. And will we disagree at times? You bet. But we'll be so unified that those disagreements just become, you know, just inconsequential. Right? Let us be one. And as we surrender our lives to God's will and allow him to get rid of those things that aren't of him, guess what he's going to fill it with? Things that are of him. That's the fullness of Christ right there, folks. The fullness of Christ is God removing things that aren't of him and replacing it with things that are of him. And let's stop ruining our appetite on things that do not satisfy. Who? And then we're going to become the temple. I'm going to become the temple God's called me to be. We're going to become the church God's called us to be. We're going to be this body of believers that he desires to partner with in order for what? To transform the world. transformed lives transform lives. Just saying. Transformed lives transform lives. You want to see the lives of the people around you change? Start with a change in your life. And you'll be amazed at what happens in that process, right? And so, here I'm going to leave you with this, right? I'm going to leave you with this. I told you I was going to come back to this, right? So I talked to you about week one, about desire. I talked to you in week two about an experience. And now week three, I've talked about letting that experience lead to a habit, which then leads to a transformed lifestyle. And I want to know, where are you at on this spectrum? Where are you at in this spectrum? Are you at this opening stage of desire? Great. Desire. Maybe you're not even at that opening stage. Well, then ask God, give me a desire, right? That's what I prayed the first week. Like, God, give me a desire for more of you. And then as he creates that desire, now let it lead to an experience, but don't let it be that one experience and that was a great time. It's something that happened once upon a time in a land far, far away called the good old days. No, let it lead to a series of experiences and let it cultivate habits in us and let those habits transform our lifestyle. And let's move towards this process of sanctification, purification, and unification. And let God's presence do what it needs to do in my life, in your life, in the greater body of Christ. Let's do that. Let's do that.